The following program is sponsored by Online Trading Academy of Kansas City.
Today's show is provided for entertainment and general information purposes. Opinions expressed are those of the presenter only. We make no promises or guarantees of investment performance. Online Trading Academy is not a broker-dealer, certified financial planner, or registered investment advisor. Online Trading Academy is the world's most trusted name in professional trader and investor education. Enjoy the show. Hello, future traders and investors, and welcome to Power Trading Radio. I'm Christopher Crum. I'm in studio today with my good friend and co-host, Mr. Matthew McGrath.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Matt, and welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
If you're brand new to the show, this show is fueled by a company called Online Trading Academy. And if you're unfamiliar with Online Trading Academy, well, let me just take a few minutes and fill you in on what it is that we do. Our purpose in this world is to teach traders and investors how to make money in the financial markets. And most of the people we work with, well, all the people we work with are just the average Joe, I guess, if you will.
Right.
In other words, these aren't people that are coming from Wall Street or the Chicago Mercantile Exchange with their broker's license.
Right.
These are folks that have a sincere interest in learning how to trade stocks, options, currencies, or futures, and learning how to do so to either A, trade their money in the markets so that they can create income through frequent buying and selling in the financial markets, or B, grow wealth over time. And that's how we do it.
Yeah.
Is we invest in an asset that is likely to appreciate in value, and then over time, obviously, we can use that money as a source of income.
Right.
Like, for example, maybe when we retire, we can use that money to pay the mortgage.
That's the goal, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the goal. So that's what we do at the Academy. We have some folks that come to the Academy that love their jobs. I mean, really, truly love that job that they go to every day. And it's something that they don't want to quit. They're immersed in their career. They're making a contribution to society that they love. And yet, maybe they're just not making as much money as they'd like to.
Sure.
And so they'll go do some part-time trading just to supplement that income. That way they can afford to go on that five-star vacation once a year,
yeah,
or twice a year, live in their dream home maybe, or drive the dream car.
Yeah.
Then we've got folks that don't like their jobs so much.
Right.
And I think the statistic, we talked about it on the show 3 weeks ago. You know, my mind used to be a steel trap. Now it's kind of like a rusty, leaky bucket. But it was over 50% of Americans that dislike their job.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Hate that it's a rut for them. They hate getting in the car in the morning. These are the people that show up at 5 minutes till eight, and they want to leave at 5 minutes till five, right?
Because
they can't wait to get a. They don't want to arrive, and they can't wait to go home.
Yeah, that's sad.
And well, it is sad because you know that's a third of your life that you're spending, and doing something that you really is torment for you. When, you know, in fact, you could be trading the financial markets, replacing that income. How many scores of graduates over the years have we had leave that rut of a job to enjoy a lifestyle of freedom and unlimited earning potential?
Now, unbelievable number. Just a few last week, and you were talking about people who love their job but decide to, you know, stick with the job even though they've replaced their income from trading. We had two teachers just last week that enrolled in our program that met that category. They're very passionate about what they do.
Sure. And then, of course, there are those that really don't have an interest in learning how to trade, that is, buy and sell with any frequency, but rather they'd want to grow that wealth bucket. Or we've had people that have run into some money, an inheritance. And by the way, you know, Allison and I have been doing estate planning with an estate planning attorney. And he told us in one of our more recent meetings that the statistic, the average recipient of an inheritance, doesn't matter the size of the inheritance, they burn through it within 18 months.
Wow.
And then they're back to square one again.
That surprises me, actually. I mean, I'm surprised it's not.
I was shocked
term,
at the statistic.
But 18 months.
18
that's
months.
That's unbelievable.
Yep. And so, you know, we've had people that have come to the Academy because they're like, I just came in with all this money and I don't want to blow through it and I don't want to burn it. So I want to understand what to do with this money. And those people want to become what we would call a proactive investor.
Right.
And that's somebody who's leveraging the financial markets to create a superior return and let that money continue to work for them and then grow that nest egg at an exponential rate. But they're also hedging that money just the same way that Wall Street does, using options as an insurance policy. So, you know, if you're going to go out in the markets and assume the risk of the markets, because you probably heard the financial markets are unpredictable and risky, Well, if there's a way to ensure that money that you have at risk, why wouldn't you do it?
Of course.
And so that's what our long-term investors want to do. They want to figure out how to make returns at the speed of light, how to grow these accounts really, really fast, so that they can have income for later in
life. And also protect that money.
And then protect it, yeah.
And Chris, you bring up a good point. The way that most retail investors, people that are uneducated, accomplish that is they purchase an annuity. And that's one of the most common investments that seniors have in this country. And, of course, the benefit of an annuity is that it guarantees your rate of return and sometimes even a small rate of return. So even if there is a crash or a correction, at least you didn't lose any money. The problem, though, with an annuity is they underperform the market, and also they have the highest of fees, even higher than mutual funds. You know, in the free workshops that you give away, we teach students how to create their own annuity without paying those fees.
Right.
And getting superior returns. It's very easy.
And then your money's protected as well.
Exactly.
So if either of those concepts resonate with you, if you think you would enjoy this freedom of schedule that comes to being a high-frequency trader, maybe it's unlimited earning potential, obviously. There's an upside to that, right?
Right.
If you're excited about that idea, if you think you could be excited about managing your own long-term investments while you create wealth over time, well, here's an idea. Why don't you check us out on the World Wide Web at TradingAcademy.com. That's T-R-A-D as in Dan. TradingAcademy is all one word, .com. TradingAcademy.com. It's a great place to get started. And by the way, it's a very comprehensive website. We have got so much stuff out there for you to get started with. And it's pretty interesting reading. We mention quite often that there is actually, if you're interested in this type of subject matter, there is it's not a newsletter. We kind of refer to it as a newsletter, but what would you call Lessons from the Pros?
Gosh, it is hard to come up with a name for that, but I can tell you what it is it's articles from our most successful traders
and
our instructors. They're also professional traders, and these are heavy hitters. I mean, hedge fund managers, former CME floor traders, just incredible people that are very successful traders, and they're teaching you, basically. It's much, much more than a newsletter, and that's free for anyone.
Right, you sign up for it, and you'll get an email once a week from Online Trading Academy saying that it's been published, and you click a link and you'll end up at the site, and then you can read the articles. And these things are archived all the way back to 2012.
Right.
You can't imagine how many articles there are out there that were written by these professional traders.
I just used one last week in one of my trades.
Did you?
Yeah.
Nice. Hey, I think we've got a great show for you guys today. We always try to have a great show for you. We're going to try to bring a little bit of humor to the hour, as well as maybe teach you some things about trading and investing in the financial market. So I hope you're going to stick around. And through the breaks, I'm going to be giving away some pretty cool things right now. Well, if you're a little confused about what you're doing right now, you're listening to Power Trading Radio with Christopher Crum and
Matt McGrath.
Perhaps the greatest co-host in the history of radio broadcasting is in studio with me today, and his name is Matthew McGrath.
I still don't know who you're comparing me to, but I'll take that.
So. All of them. we could do, remember back in the old days on Johnny Carson when they would they'd go for station identification, but it was Ed Mann who was selling dog food.
Ed McMahon, yeah.
Or Ed McMahon. Ed McMahon. We could do that on the show if we get somebody to advertise.
He was one that needed some financial education. I don't know if you remember what happened to him.
I don't.
Oh, yeah. He ended up with nothing. I mean, he lost everything.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Google that sometime.
Well, that's sad.
And sometimes people with the most money are the worst at managing it. A lot of sports celebrities and things like that who died.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I think I mentioned this last week on the show that we were doing some estate planning. And then I think 2 weeks ago I mentioned this, that the attorney that's doing the estate planning told me that statistically people that inherit money, they go through that money within 18 months. And it doesn't matter if it's $5 million that they've inherited or if it's $150,000.
Yeah.
They burn through it within 18 months.
I watched an interesting documentary on HBO about a year ago where they did an experiment where they took a homeless man and gave him $100,000. And they wanted to see how long that would last him. And it lasted a couple of months.
Sure.
Now, he was very giving. One of the problems was he was just giving money to everyone.
Right.
That he knew. He was helping his friends. He did buy a truck, and he paid cash for that. But 6 months later, he was living under a bridge again. Isn't that amazing?
Well, and I think it seems to me that I've watched a documentary or TV show about lottery winners.
Right.
That sometimes win hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
And then they find themselves penniless.
Isn't that amazing?
It's pretty amazing to me because you don't need to be a rocket scientist. You just need to be conscientious about your money. If you inherit that money, then the first thing that should go through your mind is, okay, this can see me through retirement somehow. What's that look like? And let's plan for that.
Right.
And then if you want to upgrade some things like your house and your car, well, then it doesn't have to be the most expensive one that you can afford.
No.
Go out and find something that's nice that you'd enjoy, but let's be practical about
it. And it
things.
Doesn't have to be everything at once either. I mean, to me, part of the joy, is really taking time to do it. You know, I make it a goal each month of maybe doing something, an improvement or something like that. But
sure,
we don't want to do everything at one time simply because we have the money.
Right. But I think sometimes these people make it their full-time job to spend it and spin through it. So
it's easy to do.
You know, it's interesting because the average American doesn't necessarily get a windfall like that. And a lot of times, I mean, statistically right now, there's not going to be a lot of windfall money or money being inherited. I think it's less than 5% of baby boomers, and there's 74 million of us, but less than 5% of us are going to outlive our money, which means there will be no inheritance. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because, first of all, we're living longer now. Medical science has gotten better.
Right.
But then also medical costs have become a lot more expensive.
Right.
So as you age, obviously, there's increased medical costs. If you end up in an extended care facility, that's about $8,000 a day per person.
Right.
Remember our student Zane?
Yes.
His whole purpose for going through the trading academy, I mean, he had a very successful business, was making plenty of money, but it just so happened he had two elderly parents, both of whom ended up in extended care.
Right.
And I think Medicare pays for that for about 100 days.
Right.
After that, you're on your own.
I think he had to pay $15,000 each
per
month.
It was for both of
them.
Was
it for both of them? But it was outrageous because he was very successful. I mean,
right.
He had a very successful business,
right.
An upper six-figure income,
right.
And was having to do this because he needed another source of income,
right.
To take care of his aging parents.
So that's what he used it for. But, for retirement, and if you think about it, what's supposed to happen, I think I mentioned it to the first segment here, is that we want to become independently, not wealthy, but financially independent.
Right.
Maybe that's wealthy for some people. Maybe some people need the millions of dollars to sustain their lifestyle.
That's different for everybody, sure.
Others, you know, that have a frugal lifestyle don't need as much. But it does require some planning. And back in the old days, I can't believe I'm saying that, they used to have pensions. You know, my grandfather, he worked on the highway. He was a highway foreman up until he retired at age 65. And this was up in Washington County, Kansas. He did the highways for the entire county. And he had a nice little pension to retire on, and the state paid him out up until the day that he died, so that he could supplement Social Security with it.
Sure.
And back in the late 70s, the government passed a law that allowed middle America to go ahead and save money tax-free, called the 401k.
Right.
And then employers could opt in to then contribute to those 401ks. Which is kind of a cool gig, man. You know, if I remember back my first 401k, I think my employer match was 50%.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that one time when I had a 401k, they were matching 100%. Very rare these days now. The most match maybe 25%, and then
try
only 6%. Up to the first 6%, right?
Up to the first 6%.
Right.
So, you know, but what's happened over the years, of course, is these companies have decided, well, why do I have a pension plan and a 401k?
Right.
I mean, it was supposed to be a three-legged stool here,
exactly.
That would prop you up in retirement. But instead, these companies decided to go ahead and do away with their pension plans.
Yeah.
And that left you with your 401k. And then over the years, they've decided to contribute less and less and less.
Yeah.
And your 401k, of course, is not that great of an investment anyway. I hate to break it to you, but it's comprised of mutual funds. We talk about that all the time on the show. There are fees associated with these funds, and none of them, I mean zero. 0% of them outperform the markets consistently.
Right.
So you might have a year when you got one of them that really goes to town, but the next year it's just not doing that hot.
Right. I mean, there's so many problems. You know, over the last 17 years, the market has averaged just under 4%, and that's before inflation. Okay, so one, we're assuming we do as well as the market, and 86% of mutual funds do not. In fact, half of them underperform the market by half.
Right.
Then, even if we are doing as well as the market, you're part of the 14% of funds that do in a given year. That's only 4%.
Right.
And that's not going to get us to where we want to be in retirement.
Right.
Like you said, there were supposed to be three pillars to this.
Uh-huh.
Social Security, the 401k and a pension. And again, when the 401k came out, companies started doing away with pensions.
Sure.
And by the way, pensions is something I'm not sure that we've discussed on this show. One of the disturbing trends I've seen lately, you know, I meet with, 40 to 60 people a month at this school and help them put together their trade plan. And we talk about their long-term retirement piece. And I meet a lot of people that still do have pensions. But one disturbing trend that I've seen lately is I cannot believe the number of people I have met with recently whose pensions are underfunded and who are not getting what they were promised. You know, I met with a Teamster here just a few weeks ago who was told just out of the blue that he was going to have to work an additional 5 years just to get the pension that he was promised. Right.
Right.
I met with a student last week whose pension was suddenly, they were notified, put into a variable annuity. And in the last several years, it's gone from $400,000 to $75,000. Now he just got another notice that it's being put in a fixed annuity. I met with a student here recently who was just notified that their pension no longer exists.
They're right.
Not getting it anymore. Because again, back in the days when pensions had plenty of money, the market was averaging 9 or 10% a year. You know, those pensions invest the money in the same assets that we do as individuals. Well, the market hasn't done as well the last 17 years.
Right.
And they're underfunded. All their projections that they had made. I have a couple of relatives that are teachers in Illinois. I don't know if you know what's going on in Illinois, but my God, I think that's the worst of all 50 states in terms of the budget crisis for a state. I saw recently that the highway patrol officers couldn't even charge gas. Their credit cards were being denied.
Huh.
So imagine you're a teacher who's relying on that state's pension. They're not safe anymore.
Right.
I guess the point I'm making is don't rely on these things. You do need to do some saving outside of that.
Sure.
And invest in these proactive strategies like we talk about on the show all the time.
Well, you know, the thing is that you're kind of You're putting your. They talk about the markets being risky. There's nothing riskier than putting your money in other people's hands,
right,
and letting them manage it for you because they don't necessarily have your best interests at heart. Every person you run across, is, with exception of me and Matt, we do have your best interests at heart. But most people are thinking more about themselves than anybody else. And so, if I'm in the financial industry and I own a company that has mutual funds like Vanguard, I'm interested in profits for my company. I'm interested in the folks working for me making money, and they're making it at your expense. So when you're looking at a pension, which is all buy and hold, so you're susceptible to market swings, and you're susceptible to the decisions being made at the top of the food chain about that pension, whether or not it even exists anymore, and or 401k, you're relying on fund managers that never outperform the markets. So that's kind of what you're dealing with in that sector. If you want to use the couch potato mentality for investing, it's just not a good way to go.
No.
I remember a guy that came into the academy 5 years ago. Now, my mind used to be a steel trap. Now it's more like a rusty, leaky bucket. I don't know if it's five, but I'm guessing it was around then. Who had worked for this company his entire life. One of the few people that I met that it had actually started at a company in his 20s and then worked through his 60s.
Right.
And he had a pension. And then he was also investing in that company's stock because he loved the company so much. And just after his 64th birthday, they made an announcement that they had to go out of business. So how much is the stock worth now?
Good Lord.
It's worth zero.
Nothing.
And, of course, they had to dissolve the pension.
Right.
So he had nothing. The guy had $30,000 to his name. And he was 64 and didn't have a job. And I didn't blame him for not wanting to stand at an unemployment line, you know, because how do you even start to rebuild that?
Right.
He thought he was going to be set, and then he's back to ground zero. So what we did with him was, first of all, we taught him how to trade the financial markets. That's frequent buying and selling in the markets, doing it daily, weekly, monthly to create income. And then we helped him put together in his trade plan this concept of setting money aside, but then also proactively investing that money so then he can use that money to create another stream of income
right. In
the coming years. And, of course, he wasn't going to be able to rely solely on that account for years, but you wouldn't believe how fast, especially if you're proactive with it. You do some active trading in the long-term account, tax-deferred accounts, how fast it can grow. But, you know, he came to us not because he wanted to learn how to trade and invest. It's because he just didn't know what to do, and he didn't want to live in poverty.
And good for him.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, nobody needs to live in poverty in this country, for God's sakes. We've got all the opportunity in the world. We just need to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And creating multiple streams of passive income, which is what Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Dave Ramsey, all these big financial gurus tell you to do, because this is the one country that you can do it in.
Yeah.
Create these passive streams of income. I mean, maybe you love your job and you want to stay there and keep your $40,000 a year job, but why not go ahead and create this nest egg? And where you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars a year coming in from passive streams of income that just don't take that much of your time.
Right.
You're not going to do it at a part-time job working at Subway, by the way. So, hey, listen, we got to pause for station identification real quick. Nothing wrong with Subway.
Right, I love Subway.
At least now that Jared's gone.
I don't want to get those letters.
We'll be right back. If you're just now joining us, you're listening to Power Trading Radio with Christopher Crum and
Matt McGrath.
And thanks for tuning in this week. Hey, we talked about really more investing here in this earlier segment. More importantly, at least the last segment, you know, what happens if you're one of the statistically the baby boomer generation, the largest one in the world? Most of these people are going to outlive their money. That means they'll be standing in an unemployment line when they're 70, 75, 80 years old, trying to figure out how they're going to put food on the table and pay the bills.
Yeah.
And but we also have been talking a little bit about how do we get there. I think a lot of people, well, here's another statistic, Matt, that you already know, which is that a very small percentage of Americans even know what their number is for retirement.
Oh, yeah.
If you wanted to retire and live off that account, how much money do you need in the account to sustain your lifestyle? And most people haven't given any thought. In fact, if you're like I used to be, I used to just shovel my money blindly into a 401k. Thinking I have all the time in the world, of course, to accomplish this. And, you know, in the end of the day, we'll end up with enough money in there and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
And that's probably the very worst way to do it. The truth of the matter is if you don't know what your number is, then you're probably, you're not planning for success. I can tell you that. And you're more likely to fail in retirement unless you've got that going.
You know, another issue along the same lines, Chris, is when I meet with students at the academy to help them put together their trade plan, again, part of it is, teaching them how to create income from a cash trading account. But then the other side is managing the long-term account. And we go through an exercise where if they did manage that account proactively, how much money they would have at age 70 and a half when they're forced to take distributions from the IRA. Well, one of the first things that I have to ask each student is what rate of return they've received in their current IRA over the last 5 years or 10 years. And you know, Chris, I can count on one hand this year the number of people that know that. Most people don't even know what rate of return they're getting right now.
Of course.
And again, you've got to know what point you're starting at. Are you doing above average, better than the market? Are you doing below average and so on? And that's scary. And that's something that we should know. And I blame a lot of this on the institutions. You know, they make it difficult for you to find what percentage you're getting. They hide it in the prospectus. I mean, I think it should
be. I think that's by design, by the way, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But if you did look at it and it says, well, I'm paying this fund manager 2%, would that shake you to the core? Probably not. But you got to realize that 2% that they're taking, man, that adds up to a lot of money. Because this is long-term savings. You're saving this for 50, 40, 30 years. That 2%, number one, is money you're paying them. That doesn't seem like so bad. But that 2%, if it's in your account, compounds over the years and can be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, no. I mean, the best example that Jack Bogle gave, who was the founder of Vanguard when he retired, was if you save $10,000 one time and the market grew at a rate of 10% a year and you were doing as well as the market over 50 years, that money would grow to $1.17 million. But if your investment vehicle is taking out only 2% a year in fees during that time, the fund keeps $700,000 of that money. You get to keep $470,000.
Right.
The average person now, when they finally do go to withdraw from those long-term investment vehicles, mutual funds, has paid two-thirds of the growth in fees.
Of course.
That's unbelievable.
Well, but that 2% that's not compounding for you over that long amount of time, that's where that $700,000+ is.
Exactly.
So it's money that you just don't receive, for sure. So you're paying it out, but you're also not receiving a ton of money.
Yeah, and that's called opportunity cost. I mean, what you could have done with that same money. So that financial institution that's taking out those fees, they're not investing that money in a mutual fund.
Right.
They're trading it and they're producing astronomical returns. And that's what's called opportunity cost, what you could have done with that same money.
If you wanted to do this yourself, I'll tell you what it looks like. First of all, you know, if you've got a 401k, if you have a decent employer match, well, then keep that 401k. But I just wouldn't put all my eggs in that one basket.
Sure.
You know, contribute enough.
Up to the percent that they're matching.
Yeah, up to the percent that you get the maximum employer match, because that's a fairly decent return right up the front. But don't contribute more than that. I used to contribute so much to mine that the plan administrator had to cut me back a check at the end of the year.
I was the same way.
$2,000 to $4,000 because I'd over-contributed based upon the laws. But, you know, that's another problem is that, you know, there's a maximum you're allowed to contribute to these plans every year.
Right.
If you're 52 years old and you've only got $200,000 saved and you've listened to Power Trading Radio and you realize, well, I need $2 million in an account to be financially independent at age 65. I've got 13 years left to go here. How do I get there? Well, you're not going to get there by contributing to a 401k.
No.
And even if it's the maximum amount.
And
it's
by the way, as
happen.
We mentioned in the last segment, we weren't meant to. Again, the 401k was not created to be the sole source of our retirement.
Right.
It was supposed to be in conjunction with a pension and Social Security, but then companies eliminated pensions and replaced it with the 401k. So, you know, even if the market was getting 9 to 10% a year with the maximums that you're allowed to contribute, it's not going to get you where you need to be in retirement.
Right. So you need some IRAs. And a self-managed IRA so that you can control the assets that you purchase. You'll be looking at occupying space in those IRAs with both stocks and bonds, more importantly, exchange-traded funds.
Right.
So you get the diversification of that. And then you want to deploy some options strategies to then protect those funds. An option provides you with the legal right to buy or sell, and in this case, you're going to sell your assets on or before a specific date for a specific price. Well, what good does this do you? Well, you've just insured every asset you've got in there. If the market goes against you, the S&P drops by, 100 points with no hope of recovery, you can certainly sell those assets.
You're going to exercise the option.
Right. Exercise the option to sell it and get your money back, and then put your money in assets that actually go up when markets go down.
Right. And that's why we want a diversified portfolio. So say two of the exchange-traded funds you're holding do go down that year. So now we exercise the option to insure those so we don't lose any money. But now because the portfolio was diversified, the other three ETFs that we're holding have gone up. And that's what gets you a consistent rate of return each year.
Sure.
And avoids all of the corrections and the crashes. And this is what a savvy investor does in their long-term account. They don't just go with the ups and downs of the market and pay exorbitant fees to mutual fund companies.
Right. And you know what? This is a great question for you to ask your financial planner or if you're working with a fiduciary. A financial planner, by the way, oftentimes is just selling you an off-the-shelf product that their company wants to sell, and their company is a Fortune 500 company, and these kids that go out and sell it make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year by doing it. But ask that person, are you guys deploying any options strategies to ensure my money that's out there in the markets? Because Wall Street does it all the time. Why wouldn't they do it for you? And then ask your fiduciary the same thing. And I'll bet you, I'd give you 101 odds that you go talk to that person and they don't do it. And it's because sometimes they're bound by law. They can't do some of these things.
Right.
You can do a lot of things with your own money that other people can't do.
I've personally never come across, I meet a lot of financial advisors, obviously, in this career. I've still never met one, Chris, that knows how to even place an options trade.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, most financial right. planners, Chris, are commission salespeople.
Right.
Right. There is no law in the books of a requirement for you to be a financial planner. My brother, who's in transportation sales, could go out tomorrow with a business card and claim that he's a financial planner.
Right.
Right.
You'd have to get licensed, but.
You're right. What you're looking for, guys, if you do want to hire someone to do this for you, you don't want to be proactive and manage it yourself, which is what I believe you should do. But if you do want to hire somebody to do it, hire a fiduciary, as Chris met, who is legally obligated to act in your best interest.
They are.
And also, there's some education involved in being that job. They
right.
typically have a financial background.
Right. So. But a lot of times their hands are tied. They just simply cannot, because of their license, they can't use option strategies to, they can't cross swords with options
exactly.
and to do that. So it's something that you can do for yourself, though. And I'll tell you what, once you learn how to do it and you get your portfolio set up, you understand how your allocations should look, then really just every other week you open up that account, you spend 15, 20 minutes because your allocations will get out of balance. As you prosper in that account, you'll end up with more small cap funds than you do large cap. And if you're my age in your 50s, you want to kind of minimize your risk. Small cap is higher risk than large cap. And then the other thing you need to do is just watch your option strategies, make sure that those are refreshed and active. And, you know, if you've got these options have an expiration, if you're approaching the expiration, maybe you put that option up for sale and make even more money.
There you go.
Somebody else will want to buy it from you.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been a great time talking to you guys today. We're coming up on a break here real quick. By the way, you should check us out on the World Wide Web at tradingacademy.com. I typically mention that at the beginning and also at the end of the show. I'm mentioning it now because I kind of ran out of things to say.
Right.
Right? So, also, we have another site, which is otacademy.com, which is brand new, and you ought to check that one out. Matt and I are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is Power Trading Radio. Welcome back. Hey, if you're just now joining us, this is Power Trading Radio with Christopher Crum and
Matt McGrath.
And I just want to pause for a minute and thank you guys so much for listening to the show this weekend. If you've been listening to the whole show, then you know that we talk about trading and investing in the financial markets, how the financial industry is able to just glean billions of dollars out of the financial markets each year, and how you can do the same, trade exactly the same way that they do. That's what we teach at Online Trading Academy. We've been doing it for 20 years. But thanks for listening to the show today. If you're brand new to the show, well, welcome aboard. We appreciate you, too.
We do.
Maybe you'll set your Apple Watch or your iPhone or your Galaxy to remind you to listen to the show next weekend. I was going to name every technology in the world there, Matt, but I don't know. I'm not really that much of a tech guru.
I thought you were going to say Siri. You were going to have Siri remind you.
Yeah, have Siri do it. We've been talking about trade. We've really been talking more about investing in this show and how Wall Street, these financial instruments that Wall Street uses. But what we need to do is talk really about trading, because that's kind of the sexy thing that we do at the Academy. And I guess considering that 83% of statistics are made up on the spot, I'm going to say that over about 92% of our students at the Academy that have gone through there for the years, their first priority is to learn how to trade. Trade the financial markets for
their income. First priority, you're definitely correct, at least 92%. That's their top priority. But yeah, about 80% of the students ultimately do both.
Right. If you're going to trade the financial markets and do it with some frequency, that's what trading is. So we're talking about day trading and swing trading. These are short-term trades. Day trade only lasts a day, and then you're back to cash. A swing trade might happen over the course of 3 or 4 days or even a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But they're still short-term trades. And what we're doing there is we're leveraging what I would call artificial price movements.
Definitely.
That are caused by imbalances of supply and demand. That's what moves price in the markets. And the banks know this, and they manipulate it. These banks, the top five of them, they're collectively, how much is it?
$9 trillion.
$9 trillion. So when you got $9 trillion, you can do an awful lot of stuff. If you were to go out to the U.S. stock market, for example, and let's just take, for example, a company that's gone public. Well, when a company goes public, the board of directors decides, first of all, how many shares of stock are in this corporation. And oftentimes it's in the millions. And then they decide what percentage of those shares are going to go on the market, that is, go on the exchange.
Right.
So that people like Matt and I that trade the financial markets can then purchase those stocks and then own a part of their company.
Right.
And that's what's happening, but it's a finite number of shares. So at any given time, of course, somebody owns the stock. It's either the company that provided the stock or its consumers. And at any given time, there's only a small percentage of these consumers or the company that's willing to let go some of their shares of stock. So even though there might be millions of shares that could be traded, there's only a handful of willing sellers at any given time. Now, there are times when something happens in the company, people get scared. Of course, their emotions take over. They decide to sell off their shares. And if there's enough people that start flooding the market with supply, well, guess what happens to price?
It has to go down.
It has to go down. If there's more buyers than sellers, if those buyers are competing against the limited number of shares for sale at today's price, they're going to drive that price up.
Right.
They'll increase their bid price in order to attract more willing sellers. Well, the banks and these big banks and institutions, they know this. They also know that there's 39 million retail traders out there, some of whom may have read one of the 63,024 books that you could buy off Amazon. The majority of them, though, we know, just funded an account, and they're just trying. They're fumbling through the markets and trying some
things. They're speculating.
Right. And so these banks know that, so guess what they do?
I know what they do.
They set traps, and you can tell me about it, Matt.
Yeah, they set what's called an institutional trap. Most retail traders and investors are trend traders, which means they wait until price has gone up before they're willing to pull the trigger and buy, or they wait until price has gone down before they're willing to pull the trigger and short.
Right.
Well, the banks know this. So one of their favorite things to do is to buy as many shares of an asset as possible with their massive buying power, driving the price up, knowing that trend traders will now get in on it. And that's who the banks sell their shares off to and take their profits
from. And the trend traders continue driving the price up, don't they, Matt?
Right. And then we're left holding the bag when it goes down.
Right.
Yeah, probably the most famous institutional trap in history, the most historic one, was the Facebook IPO. So if you remember what happened the day that Facebook went public, right at 8:30 in the morning when the bell rang, the banks bought $500 million worth of it. So they caused the opening price of Facebook to go from $28 a share to $42 a share.
Right. Because what they're doing is they're consuming all shares for sale at each price point, then thereby driving the price up.
Exactly. So the retail trading world, who couldn't wait to finally be able to invest in Facebook, but they didn't want to pull the trigger on the buy until the trend had been established. Now that it was in an uptrend from 28 to 42, now they all bought, and the banks simply sold their shares off to them and took their profits. And then the price fell all the way to $18 a share.
Right.
Opened at 28, rose to 42, closed at 18. That's the definition of an institutional trap. And $2.5 billion was lost that day by retail, uneducated trend traders.
And $2.5 billion was made by Wall Street, because they set that institutional trap.
Just another day for them. You'll see institutional traps all over the charts.
Right.
When you're an educated trader, we actually teach you how to identify where those traps are.
That's one of the keys to it, isn't it?
So not only do we avoid them, but we actually teach you how to benefit from them. Because now if we can be part of that institutional trap, we're making money by tagging along with Wall Street as well.
Right. They're like big elephants that stomp through these markets, leaving footprints in these charts that are unbelievable if you know what to look for. And we're just little mice with our little satchels of money kind of riding on their back.
Right.
And I don't care if you're a mouse, a big mouse that's got a big satchel of $5 million that's riding along. You're still small
compared to them.
Fish to them in this pond.
Sure.
Right. So if you're wondering what it would take to get started and be good at trading, first of all, you do need to know that you need some money to trade with. So you need to open a trading account. Now, it doesn't cost that much money to get started. It depends on which asset you want to trade. If you wanted to trade stocks, for example, which, by the way, isn't the best asset to day trade.
Not for income, no.
But if you wanted to do that then and be a high-frequency trader, you would need $25,000 to open a margin account. If you wanted to trade options, it's $10,000. But if you wanted to trade futures, you get started with as little as $5,000. And that's a good one because there's a natural leverage component to the futures market. We want to see volatility. We want to see price go up and go down. Yeah. We make money either way.
Yeah. You make more money. You'd make more money on a $5,000 futures account than you would on a $25,000 stock account because of the leverage component. Yet we're still only risking 1% of that account if we're wrong.
Right.
In either case.
And if you want to trade the global futures market, which, as we mentioned earlier, is the largest market in the world, when that market's open Sunday through Friday, they typically average about $5 trillion changing hands each of those days. That's in one day. It's a global market, so there's a lot of price movement in that market, and you can really do well. If you wanted to trade, then you would need to have some basic IT skills,
right?
Because all the trading is done online nowadays. So if you can't drive a mouse, then you would probably struggle with the direct access software that we use to be able to do it successfully. And you need to have kind of an aptitude for it. You need to have emotional discipline. But let's talk about the aptitude part of it. Because you don't have to be a rocket scientist and you don't have to be overly educated to do this. Our youngest student ever to go through one of our programs was nine years old. He was a nine-year-old in Toronto, Canada in February 2016, and he's trading his mom's futures account.
And we have a lot of 13 to 16-year-olds, a lot of them, but nine is the youngest I know of.
You know, he'd be third or fourth grade probably going through that.
I think at nine that's about right.
But to have an aptitude for this, you've got to have some rules. You got to identify. I don't want to call it a system because it's not, but what we do have is we have some strategies that we deploy that allow us to, first of all, identify where it's likely these banks and institutions are trading, identify whether the markets are going up or going down today, and identify four assets that are low risk, high probability, and high reward in nature, and then to manage those assets. And we mentioned earlier that we confine ourselves to four high-quality trades a day. That's the sweet spot. So it doesn't take that much time to do it, usually 45 minutes to an hour in the beginning, You're making 20 decisions, and then you need to manage the risk, which means that you're going to have a sell order for a loss. Before you even enter that trade, you'll know how much money you're going to lose on that. We always limit our losses to 1% or less.
Right.
1% of our account or less. If, so if we lose on that, we lose 1%, we're still trading tomorrow.
Yeah.
But you also need to identify where to get out as far as a gain goes.
Right.
So if you want to harvest a profit, what's that look like? And part of our strategy is we identify trades that will provide us 3-to-1. That means we'll triple the money that we have at risk on the ones that we're right. And if you were to do the math on this, then you would understand why it is that you have to lose on all four trades that day to lose money. If you lose on one, you're going to break even. If you lose on two, you're going to make great money. In fact, on a $5,000 account, your net profit on that should be, using your strategy, $200 a day. Yeah. Trading 5 days a week, that's about $4,000 a month.
You know, by the way, Chris, you will have some days each month where you're right on three of four trades, and we would make $400 per $5,000 in our account. And even when you're brand new to this, on average, one day a month, you're right on all four trades, which is $600 per $5,000 in your account. As you gain experience, you'll actually have more days where you're right on all four trades.
Right. If you want to learn more about it, you go to our website, which, of course, is tradingacademy.com. You can find Matt and I on Facebook. It's facebook.com/OTAKC. On behalf of all the producers of the show and my good friend and co-host Matthew McGrath, it's been our sincerest pleasure to be in studio. Hopefully we've entertained you and, more importantly, taught you some things today. For now, so long.
The preceding program was sponsored by Online Trading Academy of Kansas City.